Well, I made a terrible mess of the intro to the programme, and I apologise for that. That was Hank Williams, though, and When God Comes and Gathers His Jewels. I suspect that in, you know, popular newspaper parlance, that probably these days means testicles, but I don't think that's what Hank Williams had in mind when he wrote the song. And before that, it was a live recording of Johnny Cash and I Got Stripes. And any thoughts while you're sitting down there? I'll just get the conversation going about morbid country and western songs.
Love them. Great. Yeah, Dropkick Me Jesus through the goalposts of life.
That's a Bobby Bear, I think
it was. For starters, yeah. You know that other Plastic Jesus? You've heard that one? I can't remember who it's by. It's about a bloke having a little statue of Jesus on the dashboard of his car, which he always prays to in the event of having an accident.
Yeah, that sounds quite a reasonable thing. Yeah. I speak as a man who wears a St. Christopher, an unrepentant pagan, but I always have two St. Christophers, as a matter of fact.
Where's the other one, then?
Well, no, they're both on the same chain.
Right. Side by side.
They like cancel each other out, though.
That's a thought, yeah. I hadn't thought, like when you put two credit cards next to each other, or whatever those swipe cards, whatever those things are called. Are you going to talk about anything in particular?
Yeah,
or have I got to sit here and try and think of topics?
No, we're just... me and Richard...
Can we talk about ourselves?
Why not?
And Richard just going off on tour, actually. That's why we've come in to tell everyone about it, to make them go. And,
please come.
We're about to undertake...
It's like organising a big party and hoping everyone comes and then you get there.
Well, I always hope that people won't, you know, because I always find about a couple of hours into a party, I always think when it's at our house. In fact, people know me well enough now who come to our parties, I just go to bed halfway through, leaving them, you know, rioting downstairs.
It's a bit like that.
You don't want that at your gigs,
do you? Don't, because we'll lose a lot of money.
Yeah. We're about to commence the longest tour ever undertaken by a relatively unknown British comedy double act. So it could be some records broken there.
41 dates and
is it?
It's all around the country.
As many as that?
41, can you believe it?
Are there 41 places to play?
There are.
In Britain.
Well, there are if you do place. Norwich twice.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what we're doing.
You weren't thinking of Lowestoft in your adding up. And Eastbourne.
What about Ipswich? Are you doing Ipswich?
No.
Nor- we sort of thought two in Norwich. People could come from Ipswich to Norwich.
I wouldn't have thought so. There's a strange culture clash there.
No, it's good, though. We're looking forward to it. I mean, we sort of... People always say, oh, don't you hate going on tour? But it's really nice, actually, because...
On day 37,
day 37's particularly good, because that's Guildford. No, it is, because, like, well, the rest of the year, we sit in an office sort of arguing with each other about the spelling of German words and the use of conjunctions in sentences and whether the joke should come at the end or the beginning or whatever. And when you're off for 2 months, you can't do that. You're just in a van with a man driving you around. It's like a sort of suspension of responsibilities. And every day you have a goal, which is to try and do something quite good for 2 hours, and you probably succeed. It's very sort of satisfying.
This is sounding suspiciously like 12-step now, doesn't it? Every day you have a little goal to get you through the day.
No, we're so happy if we succeed.
We change everyone. I think it would get irritating, but we change everyone. We do the same basic show, but we do about half an hour of ad-lib stuff every show, which means it's quite good fun, and we try to trip each other up.
You know, sometimes even we don't know if it's going to work.
Wow.
We have a pretty good idea it isn't going to work. But we try anyway.
But the beauty of having two of us is, like, if I was on my own or Rich was on his own and we'd really, like, messed up, like John did at the start, we could
nice of you to remind us all of that. who weren't with us at the start of the programme, and somewhere halfway through we'll reenact the intro to the programme.
I didn't notice what went wrong. No.
If you're on your own, you mess up, you can just apologise. But if you're with someone else, it becomes a positive strength, because they can ridicule you for your failure, and that becomes, you know, sort of quite exciting, isn't it?
Are you at some stage going to read out all 41 gigs?
At some stage, we'll slip them into conversation.
You think you ought to
try and make puns of them
in batches of 10 or something like that?
No, just look in your local paper, and if we're not in there, we're not coming.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So. We're not going anywhere in Cornwall, or...
Why?
I don't know.
What have you got against
the colonies? Going to Devon, though. Quite
you know,
a lot.
You know, no, like Scotland, Ireland and Wales, are you?
We're not doing Ireland time, which is a real shame, because we get loads of mail from Ireland. So apologies to anyone who's
we'd
over there and was hoping we'd come. But
if you'd love to come, well, how come you can't?
Because we don't organise it, do we?
If we organised it, we wouldn't have 12th of November Aberdeen, 13th... We'd have 18th of November Aberdeen, 19th of November Derby, would we?
That's ridiculous.
331 miles between those.
That's sheer malice on the point of... Who was organising this?
Rob Aslett.
He organised it, yeah. So we don't organise it. But,
I had a weekend in the days when the John Peel Roadshow was out and about in the country. I had a weekend when I did, like, I think it was Middlesbrough on the Friday, Exeter on the Saturday, and Aberystwyth on the Sunday. Yeah. And Aberystwyth, wherever you're starting out from in Britain, Aberystwyth is the furthest away town from where, even if you're in Wales already, it's still, to getting to Aberystwyth takes at least a day.
But you were doing that on your own, which was terribly soul-destroying, wasn't it?
I quite liked it. I've always been a bit of a miserable bugger, really. I've always been quite happy just being by myself, really. I can't, sometimes I almost prefer that. And the rest of society is happy to fit in with my plans.
Yeah, we can leave. Then there'll only be you and the millions of listeners.
Right. I better play the millions of listeners a record, I think, or they'll be getting fretful. Tonight, both in Glasgow. I'd greatly appreciate it if you could read these gigs out, and I hope you'll enjoy your Mancunian holiday. Holiday? It's talk of working around the clock, is what it is. But so, what are you going to talk about, Stuart?
Well, a couple of things that have been. Excuse me, I'm coughing.
I've come to you at the wrong time, haven't I?
No, imagine. Did anyone see Newsnight the other night when Jeremy Paxman had that frightening coughing fit? Oh, it was terrific. He coughed for about. Well, it probably was about a minute and a half, but it felt like an hour. It really was compelling television as he went purple. And
he's working on a program that's just him coughing.
Is he?
A new coughing program. Yeah.
Well, I was going to try and make some torturous link now about faux pas, because that's what I wanted to sort of do some stuff about and engage the listeners as well, because this Mark Bosnich thing that's been in the news now, Aston Villa goalkeeper, who has given a Nazi salute at Tottenham, which I suppose qualifies as a faux pas, and he seems to be genuinely stricken with remorse now, and you kind of do have some sympathy for him.
He got a bollocking from his mum. I just read it in one of the papers,
really?
Over in the corner, because, yeah.
If only Mrs. Hitler had stepped in.
That's right. Come on, Adolf, you and your silly ways.
But he does seem genuine, and I think, well, everyone's done something in the heat at the moment that, you know, they since regret, but then, I imagine, then you kind of, your sympathy for him is tempered by the fact, as a general rule of thumb, don't make a Nazi salute, because someone somewhere will get offended by the old Nazi salute. Really.
Yes, it never goes down well at parties.
And also, this hot on the heels of that wonderful story about Frank Kermode, the literary critic, presumably maybe even a relation of our very own Mark Kermode, who, did you see the story that he gave away his collection of antiquarian books, 20,000 antiquarian books, first editions of like Beckett and Yeats, and he gave them away to, he was moving house, and he gave them to the bin men, thinking they were the removal men, who of course trashed them, and he's lost a lot, which again, you've got to have a great deal of sympathy for the man, but wouldn't you have thought these are particularly filthy and smelly removal men who have come to the door, and everyone in the street is moving house, it appears, and putting their belongings into bins.
You'd have thought you'd have spotted it.
Certainly must have been a rather long time in the groves of Academe, and out of touch with reality not to realise that. So anyway, faux pas, because there have been some classic musical faux pas down the years, but most of them actually quite serious, it now occurs to me, like, you know, Bowie's alleged Nazi salute at Victoria Station.
Oh, the back of the car.
The back of the car. He says he was waving at someone in the crowd. Which, again, would have sounded good at Nuremberg. Goebbels had said, I was just waving a lot.
There was a big crowd, though.
It was an enormous crowd, yeah. And it did come hot on the heels of him saying, Britain needs a fascist dictator. And it came the day before he was stopped at the Russian-Polish border with a suitcase full of Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah.
So the odds were kind of stacking.
Bowie fans sort of play down that era of his life, don't they? It's been quite forgotten.
Oh, well, I mean,
but we all have the capacity, let's face it. I mean, people we admire unreasonable degree, we've managed to overlook some of their failings, don't we?
Oh, the capacity for stupid. Around about that same time, well, Lennon's is the classic, perhaps, faux pas. He perhaps wouldn't recount it if he were alive. Writing the Evening Standard in 1966, right now the Beatles are bigger than Jesus. Which would maybe a bit mathematically correct, actually. I don't know. It would be hard to work out.
It's certainly something you could debate sensibly, I'd have thought, rather than just being a hysterical overstatement.
Absolutely.
Well, there was only one of Jesus, and there were four of the Beatles. So they were bigger.
They were bigger.
They were four times bigger.
And, of course, it
would have come to a scrap, I think.
He had other forces on his side, though.
Arguably.
But well, Ringo, you know, drum a bit.
Or more of a sort of music journal. One my favourite music journal four part is someone, a colleague of mine who shall be nameless.
Who was it?
Was called to, I can't tell you, it was Paolo Hewitt, was called upon to interview Stevie Wonder, who had a suite at the Park Lane Hilton, which is a fabulous look overlooking Park Lane, and did, as an ice-breaking question, go to the window and say, terrific view you've got here, Stevie, isn't it? And, you know, didn't realise that sort of sounds. So what I wanted to do was musical...
I used to get letters from, on a very regular basis, from this woman, obviously slightly disturbed woman, who was under the impression that where she got the idea from, I simply can't imagine, but who knows on these occasions. She thought that I shared a flat somewhere off Baker Street with Lou Reed and Stevie Wonder. And she'd write me letters, John, you know, can you tell Steve I don't like the new single very much, you know, but I'm looking forward to the LP. And as for that Lou, you know, and it's all stuff like this. And I used to say to her on air, you know, or write back to her, and so I'd say, you know, it's, we have such fun together, but we hate it when it's Stevie's turn to do breakfast, you know. And she just carried on writing. Anyway, sorry.
I was wondering, and if anyone, I was going to have that as a sort of strand about four parts, but if anyone out there knows of any classic musical or otherwise ones, really, you can fax us. This is sounding so DJ now, isn't it?
On 06, you are a DJ.
Well, I know, as a manner of speaking, yeah. 0645 110 100. You can do that.
Do it again, go, that's 0645.
That's 0645 110 100.
It's good the way you went 110 100. That's what DJs do. Don't go 1 1
1 1 0 1 0 1 0 1 0 1 0 1 1 1 1 1 1 1
1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 1 actually, I think the B-side of the single. And Stuart and Richard, I know I'm not supposed to call you back into the programme at this junction, but here's a fax from John Bell from Kilsyth, I think it is, Glasgow. He says, dear John, love your shows, always try to listen. I think that try is rather key.
How hard can it be?
That's right. He says, can you please ask Stuart or Richard if they recall the name and artist of a song they played on their show on Radio 1? It may have been called I Can Fill That Hole For You.
I Can Fill That Hole For You?
Yeah.
No.
I think you're confusing us with someone else.
Yeah.
It's one of the smutty programmes.
I can fill that hole for you. I don't know, usually people on it, we can usually remember, because we have so few things we can actually agree on that we want to play that we can usually remember. But that does just,
I think it's some kind of bet there to get that onto the radio. Mm-hmm. To get John Field to say, I can fill that hole for you. Yeah. And you've succeeded.
You've won your bet, John, yes. Okay, time for me to play another record. Then. We'll come back to you officially later on. This is Wilson. Note from there, with some gigs and things that they've got coming up on it that I was going to read out in a loud and clear voice, but I can't find it. So it's your turn again, Stuart, I think.
I wanted to continue thinking about four parts because that's how I've started.
I'll stop doing this, I promise. But I've now found that letter from Wilson. No, it says, how about bringing some enjoyment to the lives of a bunch of depressed City supporters by giving their gig at the Manchester Boardwalk on October the 23rd a mention on your show? And if you really wanted to bring them happiness, you might even give their single, Josmo King, Another World. Well, I've just done that, so there you
fantastic.
Go.
Fantastic.
It's nice to be able to bring... Sorry, go
on. No, didn't you? I thought you were going to ask me. Are there some people in? Is that for later on? Are there some people in Cambridge you want me to say something?
Actually, there are some people in Cambridge who want you to say something. And amazingly,
to say, can you fill that hole?
No. Oddly enough, not entirely unrelated. They want you to say tongue.
Tongue?
Yeah.
As in.
As you just did it.
Tongue, I think they probably want you to say, I bet.
Now you've got me. I have to say in context now, because I'm deliberately affecting a voice. How can I say it?
I'll be careful here.
Yes, let's think of an innocuous phrase that contains the word. Oh, I probably would say tongue. Yeah. That's what they want me to say.
Right.
Tongue.
Danny Spence of Gunthorpe, Peterborough, Cambridgeshire and his mates.
Gunthorpe?
I think that's
what's going. Well, he's riled now.
Yeah,
no. People in East Anglia can talk about
the whiff of a fictitious locale, Gunthorpe.
Yeah, so the possibility of another tasteless joke.
You know, someone's editing all these things together. I can feel it off your tongue and everything. There'll be someone's Christmas party will be enlivened by celebrity obscenity. Well, he says rather elevating himself.
Something I've noticed on this programme and on the other programmes I did when I was Mark Radcliffe for a week. Or so, is that everybody who comes in, like, knows each other, but they also know everybody else in the world. So all of you are sitting there talking about things that you have in common, people that you know in common, places that you go to in common.
No, I only met Stuart for the first time last Tuesday at the pop quiz that we
see.
It sounded like we were always there.
Because I thought perhaps it was like me and Lou Reed and Stevie Wonder, and you all did live together.
Celebrities live in a big flat, apart from you, John. And it's been a big secret. Yeah.
Don't tell him where we are, for God's sake.
Here's I just don't know how Stuart McConey got into the
stories about them.
Yeah, well, Lou Reed moved out to go to John Peel's flat.
Yeah, Lou moved out, the rent seemed reasonable, so I moved in that big old flat. Okay, I completely lost my drift now.
We don't know anyone, me and Rich, we don't know anyone famous. No. Who do we know? We know Annabelle Giles. That's it, isn't it?
Well, we tend to alienate, it was to do with phone pass, we tend to alienate any famous people we meet by being all starry-eyed and not and saying the wrong thing.
One of the reasons I started talking about faux pas is because David Quantick this will make John even more worried that a conspiracy is going on behind his back. But the other night we were in a pub in London with David Quantick and myself and Martin Roster from Gene. And the reason that this faux pas subject came up is because Martin Roster told us, remarkably, that he'd been to school with a member of the Spice Girls and a member of Let Loose. The three of them were all in the same class. And David Quantick said, blimey, you could have formed a really crap group. not that you're crap, Martin, you're good. But they're quite crap, aren't they? And then I'll go now, so.
Spice Girls.
Spice Girls are good for, you know, for that, aren't they?
Oh, I'm not... opinions expressed by this person are not necessarily...
But their three very different approaches would have made a crap group.
Yeah,
that's what I'd have got out of it.
It'd be like the Travelling Wilburys, wouldn't it? A bit, you know.
Rather strange Travelling Wilburys.
Which one's going to be Roy Orbison, though?
Not with that lineup.
I want to get back to faux pas, because the other thing is that Bob Dole has made some rather tremendous ones recently. Have you seen the thing that he said that he congratulated the Brooklyn Dodgers recently on winning again? The Brooklyn Dodgers, who moved from Brooklyn, now the LA Dodgers, moved in 1958.
But that's the sort of thing that Americans admire, isn't it? Because the 1950s are what they want. Isn't that right, though?
Is that right?
Well, Americans can do anything. That bloke just said on the news.
In politics,
they can land on Mars.
In politics in America, they seem to see sort of incompetence as a mark of integrity as well. I mean, like you know, the guy that who's the bloke who could never spell potato.
Oh, Dan Quayle.
Yeah, he's always brings that up. That's his Republican Party joke. He sort of goes, I may not be able to spell potato, but I know what's good for society.
I know what a potato is. You know. Well, when asked about this is rather nice. You should mention that, because when asked about the Holocaust, Dan Quayle replied, "It was an obscene period in our nation's history." No. Not in our nation's history, but in World War II. We all lived in this century. I didn't live in this century, but in this century's history, was his considered response to the subject of the Holocaust.
It's good to know that people like that are on the fringes of being in charge.
One of my favourites, this is a mildly political faux pas. I was once in an amateur dramatics group who were doing a benefit for Amnesty International.
Oh, yeah. You've lived life, haven't you?
I have, to the full. Absolutely.
You could die tomorrow.
With the Spice Girls in it.
Now I understand why you're a celebrity.
It's me, some of the dramatics people, the Boo Radleys, and we were playing a benefit.
Is this what we're supposed to be doing? Or is there another agenda to which we've not even got close to?
Don't worry, this is going out.
Right, okay.
None of this is going out. And after the performance, we were getting sort of changed backstage, and the secretary went to the front to give an address and said, well, I think we'll all agree that was a tremendous performance, blah, blah, blah. Now, as you know, each Amnesty International group around the country has got their own political prisoner that we write to and send succour to, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, ours has been released. And so we'll have to find another one.
Inconsiderate swine.
So there you go. So I may do some, I may not, but I may do some more of that kind of thing later.
Okay, time for another tune, except I think it's this one over here that I'm going to play you now. This is... Starts very right. You put in lots of records to start really quietly so that I'll panic and think I've done something wrong again. It's all the producer's fault. Nothing to do with me, listeners.
It's not his home studio.
First class single, I think, from AC Acoustics on, I'm not sure what record label it's on, to be honest, but Stunt Girl is the title of it, and I seem to remember a note of being attached to it at one stage saying they've got an LP coming out later in the year, and I look forward to that. Well, despite their music, I admire a couple of them, at least, for the way that they got through some kind of elitist security barrier at the 1995 Phoenix Festival. I've seldom seen anything done so beautifully. One moment, they're on one side of the barrier, and within just like a twinkling of an eye, they were on the other side of the barrier, and to this day, I don't know how they did it. It was a beautiful thing to witness, though. Right, I think it's a Lee and Herring break here, although it doesn't, frankly, this doesn't seem to make much difference, really, because we all talk throughout everything.
And all together, actually, all at the same time.
And so.
I hope that's understandable to people, but it's very exciting for us all to meet each other.
We've got some nice...
Although we do all live together, we should have
that. Except for me.
We've got some people have faxed us, which is marvellous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice.
But Caroline Gray of Huntley in Aberdeenshire has asked if she can have some free tickets to see us. And no, you can't, because we're travelling to Aberdeen. We're travelling 600 miles in 2 days to come and do that gig. So we have to pay off the petrol.
She's the one who lives in Depot Road.
She's in Depot Road. We don't want to give too much away.
It does sound like not a lively place.
It's a very attractive
Hey, everybody,
depot.
Let's get down to Depot Road. It's all happening down there today.
It's a historic depot they're named after. But we also, you spelt possible P-O-S-I-A-B-L-E. So you definitely can't have tickets.
Lots of people keep writing to us, like, asking us what we played when we used to do a show on Radio 1, and, you know, just listen the first time round. We may never be asked again or to do anything.
But I get that. What I get is people wait about 11 years, and then they write in and say there was... it was just after a reggae record. I think it had the word jar in it, and... And of course, like being a complete book, I try and find out. I spend days going through piles of paper trying
to... I'm glad you brought that, because I remember listening to something about 1981 of you, and it was a reggae song, and the chorus was Money Worries, like that. I really liked it. Can you remember who that was?
No.
If you'd like to take a bit of time to find out, I'd appreciate it.
There'll be somebody listening who will know the answer.
For Alan Driscoll, we've got to say, GCSE Russian Oral!
Some reason. Wow. And
because they're going to take, they're doing this thing, they're putting it together, it goes with whatever it was between
tongue,
tong and
can you
put it in
hole?
There. Oh, I keep on hitting my mic.
Melissa O'Reilly said to us, did we play.
Hello, Melissa.
Yeah, you see, we know you are. Did we play $500 bottle of wine by The Fall on the show? No, we didn't play that on the show. The last Fall song we played was No Xmas for John Keyes from The Fall's first album.
Listen
really
next
old,
time.
So listen next time.
We put a lot of work into our show.
It's a surefire way of getting mail, though, isn't it? Yeah. Play Obscure Records and then mumble the title.
Obscure records? The Fall, an obscure record?
Well, I mean,
am I allowed to walk out? Is that in my contract?
I'd say your point. In the grand scheme of things, I think No Xmas for John Keyes is an obscure record. No?
Well. Not in the world I'm proud to inherit.
Not me. It was a Christmas record anyway, that one. We played it at Christmas, didn't we?
And Go to Bed, Melissa.
Go to Bed, Melissa. It's too late for you.
We're on MTV at the moment. If people want to see what we look like at the moment, I'm quite fat and Stu's relatively thin.
And we look even thinner on MTV, because everything's filmed very flatteringly on MTV.
We're on
so.
At 6 o'clock. We're filling in for Toby Amos.
Who's away at the moment.
It's very good fun
something. It's interesting doing MTV, actually, because it's a real delight to come in here and hear some raucous, exciting music after listening to sort of chart stuff all day.
I don't know, E17 and Gabrielle was pretty raucous.
It was quite good, wasn't it? Yeah.
And that's quite right. I can make a faux pas now and call the Fall obscure.
Yes, you certainly weren't.
Hey, that links you back to the faux pas.
Oh, well. Right, we seem to be petering out a bit on this one. Is it time to... in that case, I shall play another record. This is the one that I urge you, listeners at home, but also the people here in the studio, to listen to most carefully. This is the work, and marvellous stuff it is too, of the Swedish Elvis Presley, a man called Eilert Pilam, and from his greatest hits LP...
Can I just ask, would you consider this obscure?
Well, it is at the moment.
Listen to it and remember it now.
You will remember this for the rest of your lives. Your lives... In 2 minutes' time, your lives will be different lives. Your lives will be different lives.
Won't throw a pod in the car door.
Well, make it 2.5 minutes, because I was playing the wrong track then. I think it is important to get the right one. Because I just push these things into the machine and forget to cue up the right one.
That's right.
Oh, no, hold on. You keep talking. In fact, I'll open your microphones and you can talk while
You've
I try
You've seen
and,
the Streatham, Elvis, haven't you?
Yeah, I've seen... There's two restaurants next door to each other in Streatham in South London, which both have Elvis impersonators in them. Which would seem to be testing the limits of the market, really, for Elvis impersonators.
There's a guy in this... region somewhere. I can't remember seeing him when I was still living around here on Granada Reports. So he changed his name to Ron Elvis Presley. during the interview, every time the name... Why have you changed your name to Ron Elvis Presley? And he said, because I love the King. He's from something like Rottenstall. Because I love the King. And he's great. And every time the interviewer, I think it was Bob Graves, would say, so what is it about Elvis? Every time he said this, Ron Elvis Presley would stand up. You know, like some people bow their head when they say Jesus. He would stand up. And in the end, they'd sit down. And he would not sit down. So, Ron, if you're listening.
It's funny, because Elvis is called Elvis Ron Presley, isn't he?
Almost. That's actually true. It is almost, isn't it?
I think it's time for me to play this record. Another go of playing this record. That was one of those embarrassing moments, because when I first looked up at you all, you're all sitting there absolutely stoked. Oh no, I've got this terribly wrong. But that is rather wonderful, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's the best music to come out of Sweden, certainly.
In the recent past.
In the very Would you like to hear him doing one of his up-tempo numbers?
Yeah, go on, quickly.
I think Long Tall Sally. Is
give him a chance, you know, you've got to give him
a chance. It's like being at someone's house, this is, and them going, oh, this bit's really good, this is
Well, that's how it should be, too. I think that's a nice thing to say. Right, this is Long Tall Sally.
Go on, tell us, Mally, but Uncle John, he says the heaven is dead, not the final baby.
The Swedish Elvis Presley, that's Eilert Pilam, and Long Tall Sally. Now, listening to that, do you think that... I mean, because I genuinely don't know, and in a sense I don't really want to know, whether he's just an incredibly clever bloke who happens to be able to do that, or whether he... You know.
Actually, listening to it, I've spent, you know, many long Sunday nights at London Musicians Collective gigs at the Institute of Contemporary Arts, watching very, very ancient and venerable free-form jazz musicians trying to kind of recreate that same level of, like, disrespect for musical convention through decades of training. But he seems to have stumbled across, you know, accident. I don't know, is it accidentally? That's the question, isn't it?
We could ask him, because he lives with us, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, obviously.
Well, I think it's an accident, because it sounds like I was in Paris, and there was a busker, and I was sitting in a bar, and there was a French busker singing An Englishman in New York by Sting, which was similar. I'm an Englishman in New York, and in... Seeing that in Paris, it sounded very like that.
The picture. I just don't know. See, the picture of him on the front. He kind of looks.
Okay, over.
Yeah. Okay. I mean. He looks like an innocent, doesn't he?
Oh, yes.
Okay. For listeners at home, he actually looks like George Dawes, the giant baby Shooting Stars, dressed in an Elvis
suit. He sounds Chinese to me, I have to say.
Do you think... Actually, you're not supposed to be on yet. Hold on a second. I think I better play another record and then we can get you back. This is one that we tried to play last night. We tried to play. Why don't you see, do you say we when you mean me, now when you're a disc jockey, now that you're a disc jockey? We tried to play it. It was me that tried to play it. It wasn't we.
He will say it. He'll say it now, John. He's trying to learn.
It was just me. But we had to fade it half. We have done it again. I have to fade it
we
half.
We are a grandmother.
Vegas, Rocco, that was the Dave Clark mix, and it is actually your turn to do something at this juncture, although I don't know what. I've had another fax here from John Bell. He's the fellow who asked about, he obviously didn't get a decent recording of I Can Fill That Hole for You, because he sent us another fax, and it says, further to my request regarding the mystery track I Can Fill That Hole for You, played on the Lee and Herring show he's got the dates and everything. I've actually got most of this track on tape. At the end of the track, Richard's talking to Stuart Bainham?
Pete Bainham?
I thought it was a surfeit of Stewart's again. about jobs and interviews and pictures of frogs.
The reason we don't know is because we didn't know that is because the Radio 1 cleverly did a best of Lee and Herring show without consulting us about it, which and put in lots of music that we hadn't chosen and sort of. Not slag them off too much, messed it up a bit. So if you've heard that and not any of our other stuff, please listen next time we're on and when we've actually put the show together. And apologies to anyone who didn't enjoy that best
off. But
wasn't the best off.
But a Karen has written in, has faxed in, saying that I Could Fill That Hole for You is actually the refrain from the recent single by the Trash Can Sinatra. It's called How Can I Apply? So there we are. We've sorted something out. It's kind of a service.
Glad you enjoyed someone else's
John Bell,
choice of
Trash
music.
Can Sinatra. There you go. And what's it called again?
It's called How Can I Apply? And it's on their new album, and then the fax gets kind of chewed up there. So it starts with and then
it's some letters.
Deal or a deal.
But pill, it might be.
I should be able to jump in at this point and tell you what it's called, shouldn't I? But I can't for the life of me. So
the professional music.
Tell everyone your album show.
Yes, that's a cue into your album show.
Yeah, I can't tell you for the life of me what it's called. Should know that kind of stuff. Should be, you know, just there with, you know, names of immediate family, but it's not, sadly, so no.
Never mind, Stuart.
Well, we've given you the heaven-sent opportunity to plug your radio program.
How
many times we've got to pass the ball to you? What do I do with this ball and put it down?
It's my natural reticence. Yes, listen, 10 till midnight, Sundays, after your own good self.
That's true, yeah.
I hear Mick Hucknall was an excellent guest on it.
Did you? Who told you that?
I don't know, I can't remember who it was.
Who told you that?
It was a natural bonhomie between the two of you.
Darman Geezer.
Everyone in our house is talking about it.
sometimes you meet people and you don't get on because you come from different worlds, or sometimes you meet people and you just naturally hit it off straight away, and it was like that with me, Mick. Yeah.
One of those two options.
One of those kind of things. That was marvellous. No, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to plug the show.
Right.
And because I'm still learning the ropes of the old machinery there.
That's right. You're picking up hints from me as we go.
And there's an added frisson to people listening. Not only will you hear, hey, the greatest new music on album, but you might hear them being taken out whilst they're playing and me swearing or anything like that.
Being played at the wrong speed.
Tell me this. What is it that makes your show unique? Why should someone...
I've not adequately prepared for this question. Could I fire it back to you, this question? Where'd you get your crazy ideas from?
Well, what we do is we get old goodies scripts and we just change the nouns.
I don't know if you saw, there was a programme on a few years ago, not many people remember, which was Newman and Baddiel in Pieces.
We just
do that.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, right. We saw them on telly and we thought, why don't we do that? We'll just copy that exactly the same, but with different faces.
That's said with this sort of clenched teeth bitterness of someone who's had that accusation thrown at them. I know.
Every day.
I know.
That and the goodies.
I've got quite a good goodies story. A real star-studded story. In that I was at the old Marquee. I've gone to see some band there, and a couple of the members of the goodies, and I can't remember which two they were, and you wouldn't think it of them, really, but we're in there and have been drinking, and try to pick a fight with me. because I'd given their Funky Gibbon, deservedly, I think, a bad review in a music paper. But and I was rescued from these raging, rampaging goodies by Robert Plant, who interposed his body between me and them.
Which two was it? You've got to say now.
Well, Phil Oddie must have been one of them, or it couldn't have been much of a fight.
He is a fierce boy, or used to be. I don't know. But it was.
This is fantastic.
Well, did they think the Funky Gibbon was like a fantastic piece of music?
They came over to you and said, look, it's a single. Yeah. We've got to put the commercial stuff out as a single. The album's different.
That's right. Yes.
Robert, the album's like Captain Beefheart.
Robert Plant hates the goodies, though. He's always
whenever it's his turn to get breakfast, he's always puts on a goodies record, and he's.
But Bill Oddie's been charming to us. We made a joke about Bill Oddie on our first series about him fancying birds rather more than the feathered variety, and he wrote back and
he sent us a signed photo.
That's an expression I haven't heard. This is about 1972 of the feathered variety. That is.
He gave us a signed photo, and he said if we ever met John Peel, we were to punch him in the face.
He did. He actually made a record. I used to have a record label called Dandelion Records, and he did a single. And he did. He sings very well. He's got a good singing voice. Yeah. He did a great. He did On Ilklymore Bartat in the manner of Joe Cocker's with a little help from my friend.
Bill
Yeah, he did. Yeah, produced by me, in fact. And if it, we had Mop the Hoople playing the music, and the organist couldn't get it right. And we did about 12 takes, and he kept playing two notes back to front. And we eventually just had to put it out.
So I'm gathering from this then, that with my Holmesian deductive powers, that either Bill Oddie wasn't one of the two who assailed you, or that you patched things up pretty splendidly afterwards.
No, this happened before. I think
that's how you repaired him.
It was the other two.
Graham Garden and Tim Brooke Taylor. You needed Robert Plant to help you.
I've never been much of a... I was frightened of using my military training on them because
No, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough for all.
Now, someone's got to do a story about Mop the Hoople. What I like about this is every time anyone mentions something, someone else can pick up a story about something else. Maybe we should just go to a record.
I think it's time for a record. Certainly true.
Weekdays 7 till 9. The award-winning evening session is only on 97 to 99 FM. Radio 1.
Well, that part of it's certainly true. I can't be so bitchy at times. You know. The record I played you before, that was on Minty Records by Sten, and it's called Boys Are Wired Wrong. And there was, in fact, you're scheduled to, you two, I'm sorry, you'll have to be quiet for this one.
But
you're scheduled to speak again here. But once again, there was something, I've got something utterly riveting I was going to ask you, and it's gone. So have you got anything riveting to say? Any more faxes come in at all?
Well, we've got the name of that Trash Can Sinatra's album now. It's called A Happy Pocket. And Karen sent in about that, so, you know, if you were one of those people that was curious about what it was.
In other words, if you were John Bell.
If you were John Bell.
Yeah. It's nice to do that, though, on a sort of national scale.
It is.
Sort out one man's problem about something we don't know anything about.
And didn't you have a Gene story? Have you already told that? There was a
Gene.
Just because I've got a Gene record coming. Didn't you say you were talking to somebody out of Gene?
That was...
I mentioned that.
You can speak.
I'm not saying it again. You missed it the first time, then, darling.
I couldn't remember whether you said it from the microphones.
We've been having such good fun talking in between records. We can't remember if we told the Simon Bates is a wanker story or not.
I can't remember that one either. But I'll play the Gene record, I think, and cover my confusion. Your Hearts and a single called Fighting Fit. This next record has some relevance to one of the most exciting moments in my life. And this sounds like the sort of thing that people, you know, men my age, write on lavatory walls, I'm afraid. But I did a gig in Oxford once. The Mekons was playing. That's how long ago it was. And it was the only time in my life that a woman ever asked me to autograph her breast. And it was in the middle of the kind of dance floor, and she produced this fairly substantial breast. And
just the one.
And it's, well, you know, she didn't want to. She didn't have to. But she felt autographing one would be enough, I think. And but, of course, the thing is that, you know, normally if you're autographing something in sort of space, you have to put something underneath it, you know. And I thought, well, can I sort of put my hand underneath to hold it steady while I was... It was a crush, and people are gathering round. I think probably more to look at the breast rather than my autographing technique. But it was... people always think, you know, what a fantastic thing it must be asked to do.
And I think you can touch it if that happens. I think they say, will you touch my breast?
So has that ever happened to you?
No. And you're going to be in space. Well, I thought you said you were in Oxford.
The point I was going to make was that playing just down the road, and I would have thought a far better gig, were the Specials, in those days known as the Coventry Specials, and this is their Gangsters. That's a terrible link in it, really, let's be honest.
Unusual.
You know, it's a respectful way that I let the record go all the way to the end and the sort of conclusion and then speak. Now, have you made a note of that? You want to write? I've got one or two more faxes here. First of all, thanks to Steve, the Hibernian supporter, for his fax. And, I mean, that's all there is to it, really. But kindly thought. And it says here, can you please play a track by Gorky's for Rick in Warrington?
Me. 17.
Oh, so you approve of Gorky?
Yes.
Well, quite right, too. Unfortunately, of course, in the standard... This is another thing. Write this down.
OK,
well.
I'll just...
you never have the record you never that have people it. Request.
So I'll sing it for you.
You say, okay.
Barbed wire, titty...
What used to happen is people would... Then they would say, but I do have Love That's Patrol by the Doolies, and I hope that'll do.
Hey, I can come in there with some...
You're really getting the hang of this, I can see.
I can come in there with some information. Gorky's are playing the Flapper and Firkin in Birmingham on the 2nd of November, and the Sheffield Leadmill on the 3rd.
And are we playing...
And we're in Birmingham and Sheffield on those nights as well.
What are they playing in Birmingham? We'll see you
in the pub.
Same venues or different?
No, it's a shared bill. It's an unusual evening. No, we're at theatres. But, you know, if you're one of those people that keeps writing to us saying, play Gorky's Psychotic Monkey, you're going to have a bit of a divided loyalty evening that night.
If you're in those two towns.
But I'd go and see Gorky's, to be honest. Well, I would, but I can't. I would, but I can't because I'll be on stage.
You'll be on stage, yeah.
Why not get a record of Gorky's and come and see us?
Put it on a Walkman. Unusual evening that would be.
Oh, here's another one. This is from Steve. Steve. I can't make out his surname anyway. It's all messed up a bit. But it says, amongst other things, I'm glad you've taken time out to champion the cause of Earthworm Jim. Sunday mornings would be dull without him. Did you see the giant fair-bearing trout episode? A triumph. Well, indeed it was. Are you Earthworm Jim fans?
You've asked me about this before,
I've never seen the television programme, if that's what you... I've seen the video game. My favourite Sunday morning cartoon was Sunday Heroes, which is in that Gloria Hunniford programme. But they had like a cartoon about St. Patrick, and they do a three. It's all done this.
And kids all over the country were saying, hey, forget those Power Rangers. There's something of an ecclesiastical bent on here.
I love the heroes aspect of it, as if you're going to go, yeah, and then they sort of just.
They'll want to be like him.
convert Ireland rather than. But he does some kung fu.
Shiploads of people going out to throw the last snake out of Ireland. It's been done. Sorry, you'll all have to turn back. You're wasting your time.
I've actually heard from my friends that are school teachers that are very worried about children in the playground emulating the behaviour of early saints now as a result of that programme.
I think there's a routine in this.
One of those come on. And remember, St. Patrick has powers that you don't possess, so don't try that at all.
Yeah, you never know. If you get up early enough, you see some strange things early in the morning, don't you? I mean, not on the TV, just generally.
in the mirror, in my case. The thing I've been seeing the last three mornings when I've been in a fancy hotel here in Manchester what's it called? Making Over. Is it called something like that? Do you know the one I mean?
I've heard
of John Ketley and another one of the weathermen. It's one of those things, you know, first of all, you sneer at it, but then it has a kind of extraordinary effect. You know, it's like watching... I was watching late last night, I was watching that Le Mans film with
Steve McQueen,
where they have those extraordinary car accidents in very, very slow motion, sort of chopped up bits of film, which are very effective. And programmes like that are not dissimilar, in a way, you know, because
A morbid fascination.
They do, yeah. And John Ketley, they'd sort of shaved off his moustache and they'd done him up rather like a sort of Edwardian, somebody that you see on Derby Day, trying to get off with servant girls, you know, a rather overdone person in yellow trousers, that kind of stuff. All of these things, I find yourself being drawn into them, which I suppose after all is the intention.
We missed out. When me and Rich weren't very busy, and we're very busy now, we've got a lot of work, got a lot of projects in development. When we weren't very busy, we used to be able to watch sort of daytime TV all day, and you get a lot of ideas from it, just from seeing things that would never have occurred to you, sort of ill-informed experts on various
programs. Raj Prasad, I think you mean. By ill-informed expert this morning.
Who's Raj Prasad?
Oh, come on. Watch a bit of telly.
He's a guy they have.
You've got a job, haven't you?
No, usually mid-morning I've got a slim volume of Difficult Modern Verse in my hand.
he's an expert on psychology and psychiatry, but knows about everything. He can come to and he sits there and goes...
Rather like us, actually. Yeah.
we're not experts.
He's just kind of called on to this morning to sort of discuss anything, but he doesn't really know about anything. He has to make all these kind of glib pronouncements.
But he's very confident. So confident that you... believe what he says.
But that's what you need, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that extraordinary confidence. I mean, I remember the first time Noel Edmonds appeared at Radio 1, and he was there as a replacement, in essence, for Kenny Everett, who'd just been fired.
What, because he had a beard?
I'm not sure that he did at the time, but about the same height, actually. Perhaps that's the way they judge these things. But he came in, and he was seen as just like a short-term replacement. But he walked into that building, and in his own eyes, I don't say this in a hostile way, because it's actually quite impressive, in his own eyes, he was a star, and by believing this, he can become one, he's actually, he achieved that status, which all DJs, write this down, Stuart, the status that all DJs aspire to, is being famous for being famous, because if somebody says to you, what does he actually do, you just say, well, he's Noel Edmonds. To a lot of us, that might be too much of a price to pay, but I mean,
in its essence, what he does is... makes false mistakes and then laughs at them as if they're not scripted. That seems to be what he does.
Ooh. It's funny what you were saying there about, though, doing stuff with confidence. I mean, that was the vibe I got off that Elvis guy, the Swedish Elvis. He did it with such conviction that you can't really question it. And that's something me and Rich have learned, that... we can write terrible material, but if we do it with enough confidence, people don't seem to notice, and we've been getting away with that for maybe 10 years now. Until I pointed it out,
there are generations of particularly Radio 4 comedy programmes which are based on entirely that. I won't name names, but there are things that over the years, that news series and things, you thought, I'll listen to this, see what it's like, I can do with a bit of a laugh. And the number of programmes you just sit absolutely sort of ashen-faced JP, or 47, or whatever it was. And there was a thing called the Spam Fritter Man, which when I die, the word Spam Fritter Man will be in my heart. Time for another tune, I think. Great Great LP, avid consumers. It's called Bass Reinforcement, and it's on Universal Egg Records, connected with Zion Train, therefore. Power Steppers, and that's Parametric Equalization. Catchy title for a tune, actually, isn't it? When you're sitting down trying to think of something to call a dub number, let's call it Parametric Equalization. That's a good idea. Let's do that. You've got loads of faxes, haven't you, now?
Well, we've had a fax to say that Gorky's are sold out of Birmingham. So, you know, the problem we had about deciding which gig to go to is now over.
All the really pissed off people who can't get into the Gorky's gig are going to come to yours.
Come to
yours.
Us. Yeah. That's a friend of Gaz's sideburns.
Or maybe he means sold out in the sense they're just going to do Michael Bolton numbers right now.
We haven't sold out.
We're not sold out in Birmingham.
Yeah. So that means we're not as good
but,
as
you know,
Gorky's.
It's not a big college town, is it?
It's quite a big college town.
Oh, yeah,
but
we
start our tour, Lee and Herring live. Off of TV's Fist of Fun for legal reasons.
Promotional moment, listeners.
We start on Monday. We've got two nights in Norwich, 21st, 22nd. That's Monday and Tuesday.
Whereabouts? What are the venues?
We're at Norwich Arts Centre on Monday and
Tuesday.
Then Thursday next week, a week tomorrow, we're at the Warwick Arts Centre in
Coventry. That one is selling very well, apparently.
Yeah.
Get your tickets early.
Friday the 25th, we're at the Cliffs Pavilions in Southend.
I would have thought so.
The thing is, any seaside town, you probably don't have to buy tickets in advance. It seems like the seaside towns are populated. It's like a sort of...
Especially in November.
Body snatchers thing. There's anyone over 15 and under 80. There isn't anyone in the town.
Well, we're getting in the way of Stuart's...
Sorry.
Yes. Well, last time I was in Southend, I was actually heckled off at the Cliffs Pavilion for being gay. I'm not even gay. It was an unusual evening. So I'm looking forward to going back there, obviously. The 26th, we're in King's Lynn. Wherever that is. Where is that?
Seriously,
King's
Lynn?
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. The folded King's Lynn. I'm sorry to mention the folded.
Oh, dude, please.
It is very obscure.
An obscure band, an obscure town. But King's Lynn is a coming place, I think.
I think so. Well, that's why we're going there. We're trying to, you know, give these towns a chance. 27th, Gravesend, and then after that, you'll have to consult the press, because I can't sit
here all
night.
You can read 41 towns out if you want. Go on, fax in the town, and we'll take
it. Speaking of faxes, do you want to your Polish shirt?
Yes, I do. Piotr Dobrowski, who in Warsaw, in Poland, has faxed us.
That Warsaw?
Well, it could have been my charming...
That's very American, isn't it? That Warsaw, Poland.
Well, it could have been my charming pronunciation. You might have thought I meant Warsaw in the West Midlands. But, dear John, what the hell did you play before the AC Acoustics record? It makes me very unhappy that I don't know what it is, especially since, and then I can't see the rest of it. But I think you played Baby Bird, didn't you?
I did, a track from the LP.
And rather generously, you've told me to say...
Yes.
...that if Piotr wants to fax or email us again with his home address, you'll give him a copy.
Well, I've got a spare one at home, so I'll send it to him.
So if you do that, Piotr...
What a great guy.
So you do that and you can have your very own copy, isn't that? Hands across the water, sort
of. On this show, you can win prizes just by being from Poland.
Yeah. Just by being, really.
Yeah.
That's
Could you say Tong again?
Tong.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I think I've got to get rid of you, otherwise we're going to go into Claire Sturgis's programme, which would be an embarrassment. Yeah. Anything that you want to say by way of conclusion?
Thank you for having us.
Yes, I think that's
it. It wasn't
my idea. I said, can't you get some of those fast show people? And they said, no, they're far too
I've noticed that. I wonder if we do get a third series, wonder if you'd like to take time out to promote that every week in your radio time column.
I'll do my level best. Anyway, thanks very much for coming in.
Cheers.
And here's a good record for you before you disappear into the night. Well, they've all been pretty good, but this one I like particularly. This is from Revelino.